Northeast Archives of Folklore and Oral History, accession number 1012. Tape number 1012.1, an interview with Stephen McGowan on November 1st, 1975 by Sarah Treat for IDL 105.
My name is Sarah Treat, and today is November 1st, 1975. I'm here interviewing Steve McGowan on his past life and some of the things that he's interested in. Okay, now, get back down to, you were born in Bangor, right?
Holton.
In Holton.
Mm.
Okay, how long have you lived in Bangor?
About 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
How long have you been married, right?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you
Seven
been married?
Years.
7 years.
Yeah.
And do you have any children?
One, I have a boy, four.
Okay. I'm interested in the kind of family you grew up in. How many brothers and sisters you had?
Well, I hope this isn't supposed to be a random sampling, because it probably wasn't at all. I have, or at least my life isn't. I have two half-brothers and a half-sister. And my mother died when I was very young, and I spent a lot of time with my grandparents until I started school and then my father remarried. And he was in a job that kept him bouncing around a lot, so I moved around a lot, like until I got into high school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the first 8 years of grade school, I went to 8 different schools. So, but once we got into high school, or once I got into high school, we stayed there for a while.
Your father remarried again?
Mm-hmm.
Very soon after?
Shortly, yeah.
Okay. In thinking about your family,
what is this for, a social course?
Yes. Sort of.
Close enough.
Close enough.
Okay.
Anthropology, different things like that. I'm interested in also in the roles of your family, in your family. You say you did a lot of moving, you personally did a lot of moving around.
Well, the family, yeah.
And the whole family,
right.
Did. Was it, did you have a close family?
No, I don't think so.
No, like,
I had the proverbial stepmother problems, and my father was traveling a lot, so it was never really was close. It still isn't now.
You just assume keep your distance.
Well, they live in Portland. I live in Bangor. That's just about right.
That sounds pretty good. I know the feeling. What kind of things were you interested in when you were younger? Like, was there anything that really, you know, really turned you on, like sports or anything like that?
Oh, you mean like in high school?
Yeah.
Oh, I was probably a typical hellion. You know, chasing girls and drinking beer and playing ball. So that's pretty much what it centered on. Not necessarily in that order.
Yeah, no, I see your life's changed a heck of a lot, too.
I went through high school in Ellsworth, which is a fairly small town, and that's about all anybody did down there. They're pretty sports conscientious down there, so everybody is, they push you to play basketball a lot, and there was no, this was before all the social upheaval, quote unquote, took place, so I guess it was pretty much a standard high school.
Sounds really funny. High schools in Maine, I don't know, just seems so far removed from everything.
Well, they are.
I don't know. In your family, okay, as you remember, you're your stepmother now,
mm-hmm.
and your real father. I don't know how to ask this. I'm interested in like the kind of roles they played. Was it a very much? Did your mother work?
No. Uh-uh.
Was she definitely the homemaker type, or?
Yeah, because for most of the time during the week, anyway, my father would be away somewhere most of the time, and of course that left my stepmother and me. And, you know, looking back now, of course, when you're 16, you think you're never wrong anyway. And she had her hands full. But I think I had my hands full, too. It went, worked both ways.
Hmm.
So she certainly was the dominant force. I don't know why. If it's because, you know, I was the first wife's son, and she was going to try to make a perfect example out of me or what, but she kept very, very tight reins, very tight. And
did you rebel against that?
Yeah, well, naturally. I mean, and because of that, we didn't get along well. And of course, then my poor father comes home Friday night, and he's got two sides of the story, and he just sort of, you know, accepted both and never really punished one or the other. But then come Sunday night again, it was Pat and I again against the world, so.
And the battle goes on.
Yeah.
How is your family life now? Did your wife work?
She just started. Seems I just got laid off.
Mm-hmm. What kind of job did you get laid off from?
I worked for a telephone company. I put in in the central offices when they build them, I put in the initial installation of equipment and put in PBXs and banks and whatnot. But it was all a big political move. New England Tel is the largest employer in Massachusetts. They've got, I don't know, some fantastic amount of people. Well, they're the largest employer in Massachusetts of people, and they didn't get their rate increase. So it's just political. They're saying, well, you don't get your rate increase, so we got to... I think they laid off. Of course, in Maine, it doesn't affect it the way it does in Massachusetts, but they put about close to 6,000 people on the streets, where it was only, you know, a few hundred in Maine. But that's a pretty big reckoning factor. But it's just political, because they say there's no work and there's plenty of work. It's just that they said, well, you can't... The state said you couldn't have your rate increase, so...
Are you laid off indefinitely, or...?
That's what they say, but it's probably pretty permanent.
Are you looking for a job now?
Not too hard.
Having a good time these days?
I am having a very good time.
Rather like the no-work syndrome.
Well, I figure I've got it coming for... I owe it to myself for a while. I might never have a chance to...
Do it again.
...to do this again, so I just wish it was May instead of November. Because luckily, there was... Most of the guys I run around with got laid off also. And
so now all the wives going to work and...
Yeah, and we're just kind of partying for a while, having a good time. Because we know it won't last forever either.
How do you feel about your wife working and you not?
It doesn't bother me in the least.
Does it bother her? Or
only because she has to get up in the morning.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Because I worked for a long time when she didn't.
Sure. You have a little boy?
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Sean.
Sean. That's right. I've seen pictures of Sean, I think.
Probably.
Do you, like, split the child care, too? Is he in nursery school, or...?
No. He goes over to a friend's house most of the time. Because he's got, well, they're the same age, and they play together real well. So it's... If he was home by himself, he'd just be asking to go over there, and vice versa with the other little boy, so we just let him go.
Okay, you're 28 right now, right? And you were in the armed service?
In the Army.
When did you get drafted?
Well, yes and no.
How old were you when, you know,
19.
You were 19?
Yeah. That was back when, they were drafting 19,000, anywhere between 15 and 19,000 a month, so it was just a matter of time. I was out west at the time, so it took them a while to catch up with me. Usually, they figured you were good for about 19, and the month you turned 19 in, and then you had about one other month, and then they got you. But I was out west. So it took them a while to catch up with me. And when I came back, of course you have to come back for your draft. Where you originally register with the draft, you have to come back for a physical there. So when they caught up with me, I knew I had to go anyway. So that month, everybody that got drafted was drafted into the Marines. And the only people I knew that had been killed so far had been in the Marines, so I knew I was getting drafted in 4 days, so I joined the Army. Which may or may not have been a good move, I don't know.
And you went over to Nam. How long were you over there?
Almost a year.
Any feelings? There must be a lot.
Well, they're pretty much common now, everybody. Everybody knows it was a mistake, and it was a big waste. Everything you can say was out in the open. I didn't go voluntarily. And I didn't.
Did you kind of think of it as a farce, maybe, or?
No. No. You mean what we were doing there as people, or as a country?
You yourself, like.
Well, you're so concerned with the basics that you don't, you try not to consider all the ramifications, political or social, or can be, because, you know, you'd like to have a clean bath or something like that. You're more down to the necessities.
What did you do over there?
Oh, I worked on, they have a cryptographic machine. It's a code machine that they use to send messages back and forth, and I repaired them. And there was 8 or 9 of us on a team, and we traveled throughout one sector of the country repairing them. It wasn't a bad deal, concerned. I traveled quite a bit, got to meet a lot of different people and see a lot of different things, and those guys that had it a lot worse than I did, so it wasn't all that bad.
Mm. Do you have any feelings now about, I realize the amnesty issue is, it's not really over, but it's a past thought, you know. Do you have any feelings about people who did dodge it or anything like that?
No, the only thing I think that, not, I just don't think they should have complete amnesty, but conditional amnesty. They were right, they were just right before I was, but it kind of irks me that I had to, and they just chose not to. I'm not saying, like I said, they were probably right before I was, before I knew it. And I didn't really, I don't know, I suppose I never really stopped to think about it all that much before I was actually in the military. And because it was just cranking up in good shape then. I went in 66. And before then, you know, it was like you hear about Lebanon now. It's in the paper every now and then, but well, quite a lot now, but you don't really think too much about it. What would you do if you were there? And I don't blame them at all. But I think we ought to have some type of alternative service, working in a hospital or something like that. But then it's different. Well, you've got to draw another lines there, because there was guys that never went in the service at all are in a different category with guys that were in the service and then deserted. I think that's entirely too different. And the guys that deserted, they knew what they were in for. And they should be treated differently than somebody who was a conscientious objector.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever talk with your parents about this? Like,
no.
Are there any feelings your parents had that you know about?
No, I don't believe it. My father was quite a right-winger. He would have bombed the hell out of him.
Sounds good. Are there any other things that have happened to you that have really, like, influenced your life? Be it political, be it social, be it anything. You know, now it sounds like you're just kind of living things out. But
probably the biggest thing, although, you know, I realize it right now in the back of my head, but I haven't done anything about it, is this, was losing my job. I had a good paying job. I made, it's hard to say, because I used to, I used to work a lot of overtime too, but I made around $14,000 or $15,000 a year. And now all of a sudden you're down to nothing. But the thing is, all the I worked with them for 5 years, so I didn't really. You'd think after 5 years you'd have some sort of protection, or rights, or whatever. But because I had a fairly good paying job, I have a good house, and two cars, two motorcycles, and most of them are paid for now because I really could see the handwriting on the wall as far as the layoff came. But I'm 28 years old, I'm starting this from scratch again, and no matter where I go, I got to start at, if I want to stay in Maine, which I do, I got to start at 150 or whatever it is they start them out at. And that's, I guess that's what hurts the most, is having to start from scratch again.
It's a bite.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Really?
So that, I don't know what sort of long range effect that'll be. I don't, immediately it's not bad because I got a good piece of severance money. And mostly we're just consoling ourselves. And but it's going to be a long winter. I can see that right away.
Your wife is teaching?
Well, see, there's so many. She used to be a teacher, but there's so many teachers. There's such a surplus of them. She works in Bangor School Department. She's an assistant, I guess is what they call it. There's a difference between an assistant and an aide. An aide just kind of watches the kids, keeps them separated. An assistant can teach, but there's so many of them, there's 30-some of them, and they're all previous teachers. They all got 4-year college degrees, and they're all certified in, well, in school she teaches them, all in elementary education. But there's so many teachers and so few openings that that they can pay them. Well, they pay her $90 a week. And she's really, well, they call her an assistant and a tutor, but she's really a teacher is what she's doing. So that really doesn't bring much money in. And then I have my unemployment, which I haven't got yet. They've managed to screw that up somehow.
So you have a lot of guys in the same boat as you are?
Hmm. All over the country, I guess.
That's true.
So I'm going to have to change my lifestyle somehow. But I'm not going to sell my bike. Well, let's see. What else has it got?
There's a whole mess of questions here. A lot of them I really don't like. Did your life turn out as you thought it would?
Oh no, hell no. I think I've gotten to the age where just now where you realize that probably most of the things that shape your lives are just accidents. You can plan and plan and plan, but you're going to get a job because you happen to be in the right place at the right time, or you happen to know somebody, or you get married because you just happen to meet a girl in a pizza shop somewhere. You can't plan anything like that. It's all just a series of
absurdities.
Yeah, really, most of it is. About the only thing you could, you can't plan anything. I don't believe. The only thing you can do is have two alternatives to every situation. That's about the best planning I could do.
Question here, do you remember the happiest time of your life?
Yeah, probably when I got back from overseas. and the plane touched down.
Just to be back.
Yeah. I guess probably the well, we were just, no, maybe not. We were just too tired then, because it took about, it was about an 18-hour flight with 200 other smelly GIs. And probably the happiest part of that was when we stopped to refuel in Japan. And we're a pretty scruffy-looking bunch. And there was all these guys going over, and they were all had the new fatigues on, and they all had haircuts, and they were shaved. And then it made it just sunk in that we were leaving and they were going. And happy times. A lot of happy times are just created, good times. We didn't go down to Laconia this year, but we usually do. And we have a good time down there, real good time. Gives you a chance to cut loose. And just things like that in general. Most of the guys I run with have got bikes. And put a sleeping bag on a bike and go somewhere. We got a friend of ours who lives up in Burlington. And we go up there quite often. That's a good bike trip. And have a good time. But there's no happy occasion. You just create your own good time because of the people you're with and what you're doing.
Did your wife ride too?
Yeah. Reluctantly. No, not reluctantly.
She doesn't love it as much as you.
She likes it when there's sunshine and blue skies.
And 80 degrees.
Yeah. That's one thing I guess I would like to do. If I can't think of anybody's life whom I'd like to swap with exactly, but there's a lot of different people I admire segments of their life from, and I'd like to take a bike trip down to South America. I suppose just to say I've done it. And I'd like to know how to play the harmonica. Aside from that, I guess I don't have too many aspirations. That doesn't seem to be all that hard to do, doesn't it? Learn to play a harmonica and go to South America.
Think you're leading a better life now than your parents did?
I would have to say yes, just from the fact of, as far as the advancements in technology and medicine, you have a better home, just a better quality of life. It may not be such a great, may not be so good socially because there's so many changes, but medically speaking and financially speaking, for most people, we're better off. Not for myself, but for most people, you are.
Kind of a weird thought thinking about Sean right now. Can you see him, I don't know, how do you picture him growing up right now?
Well, I've thought about it, but I usually just dismiss it because the world has changed so much in the last 10 years that anybody, you just can't predict what's going to happen. So the best thing you can do is just sort of roll with the punches. Lifestyles really have changed considerably. And I don't know if they'll continue the way they are or they'll swing again from the people I knew, say, when I was your age, and people I know that are in my age group. They're really like two different sets, even though there's only, in some cases, 6 or 7 years difference, but they went through two different types of growing up.
And
whether it'll continue to change that much, that drastic a change, or it'll stay this way. Kids are more socially aware today, certainly. Mm-hmm. We could, you know, we knew who the vice president was and maybe one or two cabinet members, but aside from that, that was it. We're more concerned about what Ford was going to come out with for engines next year or something like that. probably more self-centered. And now today, kids are more, I think they're more idealistic. They want to get out and try and change things, which is good.
You still consider yourself in the kid stage?
Well, you don't feel any different now than when you do when you were 15, or probably when you're 60, inside anyway.
Too many people I know who do.
Well, I don't.
Yeah.
I can't see where I feel any different.
Okay, I'd like to get on the big topic of marijuana right now.
Who's listening?
You're taped.
Okay.
These tapes will be preserved in the archives. I'm curious as to some of your feelings on it.
I love it.
Yeah, I assume you've tried it every once in a while.
Once in a while.
Do you think it's something that it's here to stay? And it's just going
unless
to
unless they make it so legislature... unless they legislate it out. Legislate it out? Because the only way they could do it would be just to have a mere possession would be 5 years in jail or something like that. I don't see anything wrong with it. I smoke it. Most of the people I know smoke it. They always use the analogy that marijuana is going to lead to harder drugs. That's like saying, to me, I always thought that'd be the same as you shouldn't give milk to kids because that'll lead to alcohol. I can't see the correlation there. And
I think that's been shot down a lot.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to get together and listen to some music with a few of friends and do a little party and smoke a couple joints, that can go that far and no further. But that's up to the individual, because there's certainly a lot of hard stuff around if you want it. But I don't see anything wrong with it.
I think the laws are going to be changing soon. Well, the laws that Maine will be anyway.
Yeah.
It's such a minimal fine.
Yeah, I think that'll be, you'll find that probably ounce and a half they won't even bother you for.
Just can't imagine what they're going to do on campus here. I think they'd be powerless to do anything.
Yeah, well, this is, I don't know what the situation would be up here. You know, I don't know. I suspect most everybody smokes. Because there's very few people in my age group that don't now, that I know. And the ones that don't are just... Oh, I think a lot of them are just afraid of what somebody would say if they saw you. That's all. And I don't think there's any social stigma at all to it. I know guys that work in banks. I even know a couple of cops that smoke.
Oh, for sure.
I don't see anything wrong with it at all.
That's good to hear. What? Would you...
Do I hide it from him? No.
Do you get him stoned?
Well, no. I wouldn't... I figured that'd be his choice if he wanted to.
Age 4.
Yeah.
Hey, Dad.
But I certainly don't hide it.
Yeah, when I came over to your house the other day with Carla, did notice the papers just lying there on the counter.
Well,
got all excited.
I can't see where it's something to hide.
Yeah.
If my folks were coming or something like that, sure, I'd put all the stuff away, but that's just an avoid embarrassment on both parts. Just to keep everybody from prying.
Do your parents know, or?
Oh, I suspect.
I don't know. All I know is that if my parents ever knew,
this is the end of side one of the original cassette. This is the beginning of side two of the original cassette.
This is side two of my tape with Steve McGowan. And right now he's looking at lists of a lot of political topics.
Okay, Kennedy's assassination. Like I said, it was, we were in school when it happened. And it was such a shock because nothing had ever happened like that before, that everybody was just stunned. I guess my biggest recollection was how quiet it was, even downtown. Nobody was honking their horns or making a lot of noise. It was just everybody was awed and wondering what was going on. Martin Luther King. I really don't remember that much about his assassination, not enough to have any impressions one way or another. I always thought Kennedy's, I guess they're getting ready to tell us now who really did kill him. Even then I suspected, only because I knew something about the logistics of rifles because I always hunted. And I suspected that with that rifle he had, it would have been damn near impossible to do it. Oswald. And I always suspected that, and I guess now they're getting ready to tell now that Hoover's dead and most of the people are shuffled or mixed. They're getting ready to say who really did it or was behind it anyway. We talked about Vietnam. The killings at Kent State. My initial feelings and what I have now, at the time I'd just come back from Vietnam. In fact, I was taking a night course up here. And we're sitting there